Welcome back to the Definitive London Podcast. It's been a while. It really has been ages. It's a whole new year since I last spoke to you guys. So happy new year to you all. And whilst I've been away working hard on all sorts of projects, I've been watching the download figures climb, and that's really, really great. So hello to all the new listeners. It's great to have you here. I hope you've enjoyed catching up with us. And we now continue moving forward together. I'm really sorry for having been away for so many weeks. Christmas and the holidays really disrupted my usual routine. Then getting back to work and catching up with our time off, it all kind of got to be a bit much. So in this episode, I thought I would tie together a few loose ends that have been flying around for a couple of weeks. I've had lots of questions from listeners about little details and that kind of thing, so we'll get into a couple of those. And a lot of them seem to surround kind of getting around London and a fair bit of confusion, that different guidebooks have told different people different things, and friends have made recommendations for, oh, you should buy this ticket, that ticket, and people seem to be very much confused about that. So I'm going to try and summarize in, let's hope, a couple of minutes how to get around London and how to do it without too much hassle and without spending a fortune. So after that, I'd like to make a recommendation for another restaurant. I've had a couple of requests on that, so I'm kind of holding some of them back. I've got a great French restaurant I'd like to introduce you all to. But today there was actually quite a lot of people who asked for top quality Indian restaurants, so I hope that I'll be able to satisfy that request in a few moments. In other business, I'd like to give a brief promotion, if I can, for another podcast. Recently, I've been working with the great people at hotelbook.com, and we've been creating a special podcast featuring locations from all over the world with insider tips and kind of on-the-ground info from people who love their home cities. Sound kind of familiar? It kind of fits in quite neatly with what we're doing here at Definitive London Podcast. Well, I'm hosting the hotelbook.com podcast as well, so to hear more of my Britishness, you can check out that podcast as well. It's available through all the normal podcasting services like iTunes and Odeo and so forth, but it also has its own special website where you can find out more information and really dig into the detail, and that is blog.hotelbook.com. So be sure to check it out, and we've had a lot of fun producing it, and there's a lot of great content coming your way. And the first couple of episodes are very much relevant to you guys. Both talk about UK sites, one on castles around the UK that you can actually go and stay in and live the castle lifestyle, and then also about London and a bit of kind of very basic London, central London visitor attractions. So, back to the main subject at hand. Let's see if we can fix people's problems with getting around London. The first misconception is about London taxis. There seems to be a lot of confusion about that. Different taxis, minicabs, and people getting messed around by that. Here's the rule. If it's one of those big bubble type taxis, black, maybe not so black, could be green, could be a dark red, but you know the shape, the tall high back, and the taxi light, amber light in the middle above the windshield there. If you go with those, everything is controlled by standard rates, and the law on that is that it's tightest, so you can guarantee that they will give you good service, and there are stack loads of them driving around the streets. So you shouldn't have too much difficulty finding one, unless, of course, you're trying at a peak time when everyone is leaving the shops to go home or setting out first thing in the morning. They may not be the cheapest or the quickest option if the traffic is quite heavy, but without doubt they are the easiest option, particularly if you're a family with a bunch of people, or you've got some luggage or shopping with you. Then a taxi is probably quite an attractive option, particularly at the end of a long day of hitting the streets. So a couple of bits of useful info about the ubiquitous London taxi cab, and the shape I just described, the kind of high bubble. The reason for that, and you may have heard this before, but the reason for that is that a long time ago, over 100 years at least, I'm guessing from Victorian days, a law was introduced that said that all hackney cabs, or London taxis, were obliged to give enough headroom for a gentleman to sit with his top hat on. Hence, today we have cabs with plenty of headroom and not enough hats. But that's no bad thing. You can clamber in there and fit plenty of people in instead. Another useful tip is that if you see a taxi and you want to hail it, make sure it has its amber light on at the top. Right up in the middle, it says taxi on it. It lights up bright amber and you can see it from a good distance off. If it's not lit up, it means either the guy has finished for the day or has already got people in the back. But if that light is on and you hail him, then he's actually obliged to stop and pick you up. Another old-fashioned bit of law that still applies right across the UK. If the light is on, he has to stop and pick you up. Buses and the Underground are also great options for getting about London. To get the best prices, it's probably worth getting yourself an Oyster card. City dwellers across the world will no doubt be familiar with the contactless kind of radio transmitting cards that are used to pay for public transport. Hong Kong has the Octopus card, I believe, and, well, London, sticking with the sea theme, has Oyster. Last time I checked, an Oyster card will cost you a £3 deposit on the card, which can be refunded if you return the card at the end of your stay. And you can then load up the card, charge up the card with any amount, or you can buy, say, a travel card, which is a ticket valid for unlimited travel for a certain number of days. Either way, the Oyster card is an ideal solution. There's no flimsy bit of paper for you to lose. If you do lose your Oyster card, then it's traceable and you can get it reissued and not lose the money you put onto it. It's just quite a nice, secure option. And also, if you're a regular visitor to London, then you can just keep the card. So you fly home with it, I don't know, maybe you go back somewhere in Europe or back to the US, and if you know that you're coming back in another month or even 6 months, you know that card will still work when you return. You can get right back on the Underground or onto the bus, and your credit will still be valid. To get an Oyster card, you just have to fill out a simple form, which you can collect from any London Underground station. And using Oyster also guarantees that you pay the best fare. So, I don't know, you see a lot of visitors in London, and you all see them when you stroll past smugly with your Oyster card, but you'll see them there trying to work out how much they need to spend on a ticket, and are they going to use it more than 4 times in a day to get the best value out of it, and that kind of thing. Well, with Oyster, you don't need to worry about that. You don't need to care, because at the end of the day, it adds up, looks how much you've travelled, and then charges you whatever is the least amount. So, it's always the cheapest way to travel. In fact, traveling on Oyster card works out cheaper than buying regular tickets. Even if you went and bought the perfect tickets, it would still cost you less on Oyster, due to administrative savings, I'm guessing. You can also use Oyster on buses. You just touch your card on the reader, the bright yellow reader, as you board the bus, and that's your journey paid for. Speaking of buses, in the past couple of months, something a little sad has happened, and that is that we're no longer buying any more double-decker buses. Instead, we have these curious bendy buses with a rear section that sneaks around after the front. You see them right across Europe, but now you see them in London as well. And on the plus side, though, it does mean that you no longer have to contend with those notoriously steep steps of the double-decker buses, which could always be quite a gauntlet to run. Particularly in fast or even slow-moving traffic, it doesn't seem to make any difference. Those steps are still always pretty treacherous. Anyway, apparently there are places to visit outside London. Scary, I know, but true. And many of them are actually quite good places to go. And getting there can be fairly easy by using the National Rail networks. And there are many stations in London, and you can choose the appropriate one with the website, which I'll give you in just a second. But if you're buying in advance, the best time to buy is usually in more than 2 weeks in advance. You can be lucky and get some excellent value fares, particularly if you're travelling at the weekends. But to get the best price, then book at least 2 weeks in advance. And the website for all your rail travel needs is nationalrail.co.uk. You'll find you can search timetables there, you can buy tickets. It's all centralised now on one website. And that makes life a lot easier. So that kind of deals with all the transport, I think. I've done that in just a couple of minutes, so hopefully that answers all the questions which we've had. Taxis, stick with the London taxi cabs, the ones you're familiar with. If you're using buses or undergrounds, best to get yourself an Oyster card to get the best price and also for ease and convenience. And for getting out of London on National Rail, use nationalrail.co.uk. So onwards to the best Indian restaurant in London. Well, there are many Indian restaurants and many are really, really good. And right across the city, you'll find them everywhere you want them, particularly down in the East End. There are some excellent, outstanding ones down there. However, I recently ate at a really, really good one that stood out in my mind, not just for the quality of the food, but the quality of the service, the quality of the surroundings, the location. And then this is one that I would wholeheartedly recommend to anyone who is looking for Indian food in central London. And that restaurant is called La Porte des Indes. The French name literally meaning the gateway of India. So, or the Indies, perhaps. This is Indian food taken to whole new levels. The restaurant is fairly large, it's on several floors, and it's actually large enough to have an indoor waterfall that cascades across several floors. So the setting is quite spectacular. There's plant life and design and enormous mirrors. It all looks very, very good. Opulence and luxury that is suitable for the Maharaja himself. The food is, of course, excellent. The menu is very broad, and even if there's nothing that particularly takes your fancy, which is very unlikely, then the chefs will be more than happy to accommodate you and your tastes. So the bar is also pretty good. The bar offers a great range of drinks and cocktails. I can recommend the Basil Martini. It's particularly unusual, and there's also a variation on that with watermelon, which was also pretty good. So, the Porte des Indes is part of the Blue Elephant Group, and there are only two of them. There's one right here in London, and then the other is in Brussels, and that one is also very good, in case you're headed that way. For more information, you should check out their website. www.blueelephant.com, where you can get the necessary details to make a reservation, and also see pretty pictures of the restaurant and check out the menus. There's a lot of good information on that site. Location-wise, the restaurant is just north of Oxford Street at the Marble Arch end. So if you're staying in that part of town, maybe around Mayfair, Marble Arch, then it's very easy to get to. Just a short walk, perhaps. If you're a bit further out, then perhaps a short taxi ride. Failing that, the good old Underground will get you very, very close indeed. Before I leave you today, I bring you the bizarre news that a whale, yes, that's a whale, has been spotted in the River Thames. This morning, someone working on the London Eye thought, that's a bit strange, we don't normally see large fish-like things blowing water up into the sky, and surmised that it was a whale, and indeed it is. There is a whale swimming around outside the Houses of Parliament, not as if it's down towards the outer reaches of the Thames. This is in central London, Zone 1, outside Big Ben, happily avoiding all the traffic that goes up and down what is a very busy busy river. This is a city where apparently anything is possible. I really do believe that now. Well, if you've enjoyed the podcast today, please check out definitivelondon.com for more information about the matters discussed, and there'll be web links on there as well in case you forget the links I've given today. But you'll also have to sign up for emails where I can send you updates when new episodes become available. You can also download higher quality versions of the audio as well. And of course, if you've enjoyed this episode, then you can send a donation. I'm told the donation system now works, and that is available on the right-hand side of the page at definitivelondon.com. This has been Ed Thomas for the Definitive London podcast, reminding you to check out hotelbook.com and the podcast that's available via their website. I'll see you all soon.